you're all ready, then I will kick us off with the intro here.
I just told you that I wasn't ready, Aaron. Well, why are you trying to start? This is so rude.
I know, Dave. This is 2 years in. Rhyme or free, it doesn't matter to me. It's my bad poetry. Good day, and welcome to My Bad Poetry, a podcast where we take a deep dive into our poems from youth, yesteryear, or even yesterday, always asking the question, why in the world did I write this? I'm Aaron.
And I'm Dave.
And today we celebrate the triumphant return of the poet who opened the door for us, the one who came on this show as our first real guest, leading the way for 40 other poets to come on the podcast. In her last appearance, her garbage poems asked that we not bury her in a donut and reminded us all of the importance of revising. She is the co-founder of Two Sylvia Press, faculty at PLU, the daily poet herself, Kelly Russell Agadon. Welcome back to My Bad Poetry.
Well, thank you for having me, and I'm thrilled how many poets have come after me with their bad poems.
Yeah, and they have been bad.
Yeah. I do have to say that this isn't a typical episode because we brought you back on to say we've had 40 guests, we've done 190,000 episodes now, and it's your fault. So what do you have to say for yourself?
This is my intervention where you tell me not to write bad poems. I'm glad that there's others out there. I think it's a good reminder for everyone to know that poems aren't always perfect.
Yeah. Some just stay in the drafts folder forever.
Yes, I call that purgatory, my poetry purgatory, where they float around in limbo, hoping to go to heaven, usually just staying there.
There you go. Well, speaking of poems that probably should stay in the draft form, Dave, you kick us off with a hastily written poem to bring us into the realm of poetry. What do you have for us this week?
This week, I have a poem called Fatherhood. The sink is filled with soapy water. Suds drift from side to side. I scrub the remnants off the nonstick. My daughter hugs the back of my knee. I lay on the floor to stretch my back. Hours hunched over a brad nailer and wood glue. Reach to scratch an itch. My son lands a flying elbow right to my vertebrae. Walking through the kitchen, getting tired. Feet are dragging, heavier than normal. Giggling and laughing together, my kids are the sweetest shackles around my feet.
Aww.
Aww. That was cute.
Yeah. I liked the last line, and then the rest was like, I'll put some crap on the page and we'll see what happens.
I like the sweetest shackles. That idea that, you know, the things that hold us down are actually wonderful.
Sometimes.
Well, normally I make fun of your hastily written poems, but I don't think I can this week. It was too separate.
Oh, you can. It's crap.
Too sweet. Too sweet.
I know. I'm adorable.
Well, Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
Just as Dave's poem can claim to be both crap and genuinely heartfelt, you give us a poem here that is titled Both Things Are True. Mm. And so, how about you tell us how both things can be true in the reading of this poem that you have given us?
We can talk about that title.
Yeah.
I chose this one because it's one of my newer poems that I feel like it could be something, but it's not.
Okay.
I chose poems from the newer part of my life, a middle part, and then a very old poem if we get to that one.
Perfect. I love that.
Cool.
Okay. So this one's called Both Things Are True. There are some actions that you can do that do not affect the world. Wait, that's wrong. That's like saying, if I eat part of the pie, the whole pie still exists. We are arguing over concepts we have no idea about. Like when you say bacteria is good for you, good for us, I say, no, it's not. Immediately, without even thinking. We're talking about the same thing, but I'm remembering that time I ate the bad sprouts in a sandwich I bought on a corner in New York, and you are homebrewing kombucha. I am finishing up my pie, putting on my boots, and dashing out the door. Which part of my actions makes the feathers of a cliff swallow flutter? The breeze from shutting the door, or how, when I rush past, I become the wind. Run like the wind, bullseye, I hear you shout from the kitchen window. Pie crumbs on your lips. We are still complete, even though I am running to catch a bus I'll never make. But I am still running, like walking on this planet without stepping on any cracks or making them. Because if I think too much, I'll remember that all the people I love are dying, and when they die, I will still love them. So he's right, the pie is still whole. No, the pie is not still whole, it's just smaller. It just, yeah.
Did you try to edit there on the fly at the end?
I did, because I'm like, that actually doesn't, that's the problem with this poem. This poem makes absolutely no sense. I didn't know what I wrote this poem, and I have no idea what I'm talking about. That opening line, there are some actions that you can do that do not affect the world. It's clunky, and I'm like, I have no idea what's happening in this poem. Yeah, I boldly titled it, Both Things Are True. But yeah. What did I say?
Oh, boy. Okay. Let's get in here.
Aaron, always known for his great words.
Let's get in. What? All right, just tell me what's happening in this poem.
Okay, so
there's pie.
There's pie.
There's pie.
You might have been writing hungry.
Yeah.
I remember last time you were with us, you had your snacks with you.
Yes.
okay, so there's pie. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I got the sense that there was an argument being had.
Yes.
Over, like, maybe what seemed like a small decision. And yet one person was thinking of the hundreds of possible implications while the other person just wanted to make a decision.
Ooh, I like that. That sounds a lot smarter than this poem, but I really like what you said.
Maybe I'm just like putting something in here that wasn't there, but the whole idea of I hear you shout from the kitchen, pie crumbs in your mouth. It's like that person just took the bite. They didn't care. But you're still wondering, like, is the pie still a pie? I lost myself there. Okay.
I'm talking about bacteria after that and the kombucha.
Yeah.
See, I like that. I like the comparison there because it feels true to me. You know, the concept of both things can be true at the same time.
Bacteria is kind of bad. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. There's this whatever. There's this concept that I've been working through with some people, the Wesleyan quadrilateral, which is understanding of scripture and all this stuff. But it's like holding scripture and like the Bible and spirit or and tradition in tension, and holding reason and experience in tension. And so you can talk to people who are saying the same thing as you, but they focus on a different part because they like map out on the graph differently. And so like talking past someone because you're not having the same conversation with them. Like you can't understand each other because you're talking two different ideas. And I like that because it's kombucha, which some people can enjoy, and I think tastes like what I think licking a toilet would taste like.
Oh, gosh.
I can't do kombucha.
Fair enough.
But then also, I guess in the same way, food poisoning.
Both caused by bacteria. Yeah.
Both caused by bacteria.
Yeah, that is the two things, but I don't understand my focus on the pie and the I think I tried to keep circling back in here, because I mean, and then there's this random quote from Toy Story, run like the wind.
Toy Story 2. You just really pulled it out there. Yeah.
Love it.
That broke all like serious note for me. It's like,
yeah.
It really just drew me out of the poem immediately.
It just comes out of nowhere. And then all of a sudden people are dying. Then it gets really like everyone can die. So kombucha pie, kombucha. First, two things that make no sense. A line that brings you into the poem that makes absolutely no sense. Then we've got pie and kombucha, Toy Story 2.
And people dying.
And then everyone dies.
Oh, gosh. Now, for our dear listeners who can't see this, this is all one stanza.
Right.
Just a brick. Yeah.
It's just a brick. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just everything's together. Everything is equal. The way this poem is formed, basically the pie is as equal to the people I love, is equal to death, is equal to kombucha, is equal to food poisoning. And Toy Story 2.
And Bullseye. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I should have quoted from American Pie or anything that has like pie in the title. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But like I pulled out a Toy Story 2 quote that.
You got to put in more Toy Story references.
That's true.
Like add in the claw from the first one. And I really can't think of any Toy Story references that would work.
To Infinity and Beyond?
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
We can really make this worse. We'll just keep adding like, a whole series of Toy Story imagery to add on to this. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and this line right here, what part of my actions make the feathers of a cliff swallow flutter?
Yep.
And now we've got birds.
Now, it kind of feels like in the moment you were trying to do your own butterfly effect.
Oh,
imagery,
right.
But you were like, I can't say butterfly effect. I know, I'll make it the feathers of a swallow.
Yeah. I wish I knew what I was doing. When I saw this one, I'm like, oh, this one's the one that's coming on because I'm reading it and I don't know what's going on. And I wrote it.
This may be a dumb question.
Yes.
Is it bacteria that brews kombucha? Is it not a fungus? Because it has the mother thing?
What?
Is it a bacterial colony?
I thought it was bacteria, but the beauty of this poem is that the poet has no idea what she's talking about and grabbing it all. So it really doesn't matter. It could be either. Google could tell us. It's that. It's
Come on, Google.
Funny name. It's called like a SCOBY.
A scobia.
Bacteria and yeast is a SCOBY. So it is
cool.
Bacteria.
Okay.
So I did nail something there.
Okay. Yeah. The biggest question of all, does the whole pie still exist?
Yeah, that's what I don't even close it correctly. So I think what I was trying to say is that when people die, they don't really leave, but your relationship changes. But the pie is still whole, but still smaller. So you don't have them in your lives. I'm not 100% sure what that's what I think I was thinking of.
Okay.
So, but I really took a long time to get there and said a lot of really weird things. So
And I like that conclusion. However, at the beginning, it says, if I eat part of the pie, the whole pie still exists. So in some strange way, your comparison to losing a loved one to death is like taking a bite out of pie?
Well, is it like a confession when you eat the body of Christ? I don't know.
There we go.
You know what I was saying? I think there's also what was spinning around in my head too was the idea of like equal rights for humans, where like if you give rights to the LGBT community, you're not taking away from someone else. So there's that thing that it's everything's equal. It's not pie where you lose a piece. There's so much at play in this. So I don't know. I don't know what my head was thinking that day, except maybe I wanted to write a poem and this is what came out.
Sure.
Yeah. And I don't think it's been revised. I hope not. If it has, then I feel have I hurt my own feelings?
I think there's a lot of really fun ways this could go and concepts that are being explored.
You know, when they say something, this isn't one poem. It might be two or three or four or none. I think that's a Billy Collins.
15,
quote.
I think.
Yeah. it's several. These are probably just couplets.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's just a bunch of non-related, perfectly good couplets.
That I can get in many different things. And it's so clunky. There's not a lot of music in here. It's very prosy too. So I think this one clicked off a lot of your check boxes for bad
for quality. Sure. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I like to please.
you understood the assignment very well. No. Yeah. Yeah. Well, should we move on?
I think so.
Perfect.
Because they get worse.
I love it. Okay.
That's so wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, you'll have the joy of reading this title for our listeners because, yeah.
The title is A Fancy Way of Saying You Hate Clowns. So this is what we're starting with. There's a word in here I'm going to have to say that I can't pronounce, but I chose to put it in the poem. And then the poem just ends. Okay. Poem. A fancy way of saying you hate clowns. Today, the ling cod is spicy, and so is the mime outside the fish market, pretending he's clinging to a pole as the wind tries to blow him backwards. I refuse to give him my biscotti, and when he pretends my snakeskin purse is biting his neck, I'm reminded I suffer from metamphizomophobia. Once as a child, my sister let me pick out a poster at the Barnum and Bailey Circus. I chose the tiger jumping through the ring of fire. She said, I think the clown is so much better. For 5 years, I hated night, dreams of devils with red noses and tiny top hats. The moon was my favorite nightlight, though it never smiled back. That's it.
That's it.
You know what I love? A good spicy mime. That's all I can hear in this poem, and that's all I will imagine as I go to sleep, and I will call you at 4 a.m. when I wake up from my terror.
I mean, can we all write spicy mime poems? I mean, that should be a chapbook or an anthology. Everyone turn in your spicy mime poems.
Yeah.
I love how you caught that, because that completely, I completely missed that. The ling cod is spicy, and yep, so and is the so mime.
So is this mime.
This is a fun. So last week we had on Daryl Perry, and he writes particularly for the spoken word. And his chapbook was a collection of the crowd favorites from his different appearances. I give you this background because you put a word in here that's like basically unpronounounceable.
And multisyllabic.
Yeah. So do you like to do public readings? And why would you torture yourself in this way?
Absolutely. It's like I have a poem that has anesthesiologist in it. And when I go to say it, my dyslexia knows the word, but it can't come out of my mouth. So I have no idea why I put this in there. And I would have to spell it out phonetically, but it just bumbles up the poem. But I want, the title refers to it. So now I can't revise it out.
That's true.
Or I have to change it to the, I don't know.
A
less fancy way of saying you hate clowns, which is I hate clowns. I don't know. Can you say it?
Dave, you're the one that looks Greek.
It definitely is Greek, but it's in English. I got nothing.
Metamphizomophobia?
There it is. Yep, that's it. Metamphizomophobia. I think we said it.
You got it. You got it. Yep.
So I would need somebody to say the word during the reading first, and then I will copy them.
I love that. That would be a very interesting thing to do, to like go up to the mic and start reading your poem and then have your phone there and you just press a button with someone else reading it.
Well, you know what I did do at a reading once, and I thought I was brilliant, is in my poem, I refer to a French cigarette and it starts with a G. I don't know how to say it. I still don't know how to say it, but it was in my poem. And I asked the audience before the reading if anyone spoke French, and they did. And I said, does anyone know the name of those famous French cigarettes? And they did it. So every time I came to that word, I pointed to this one man in the audience and he said the word.
That's amazing.
I couldn't say it.
I love that. It's like interactive poetry. Yeah. You don't often see a poet doing crowd work.
No, guy's probably like, I just came to this reading. I did not want to participate. Thanks.
I thought you were just going to say you heard or you asked if anybody spoke French and someone did. So you're like, well, I'm not reading that poem then.
Yes.
That would be funny.
Skipping that.
Controversial take here. Are mimes clowns?
Probably not, but they had a painted face. So that's clownish.
Got it. Okay.
And were annoying me. So also clownish in my world.
There you go.
Great.
Yeah. And this actually had a very dark scene taken out of it, which I don't even want to say on the podcast, but it refers to, if anyone grew up watching Little House on the Prairie and you were a young girl, you were scarred by this scene.
Okay.
And, yeah. And so there's, if readers or listeners want to go and do some research there, that was actually in the poem. And I did take that out because I was like, whoa, this is just going in again so many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So, but one thing I put in, the Lingcod reference was actually when I was at Cannon Beach with friends. We always play, we have game nights and we were playing Scattergories. And the, you know, Scattergories, yeah, you have a word and it said spicy food and the letter was L. And our friend Matt put down Lingcod. And we went, that's actually probably the mildest fish. A choice, a joke like spicy Lingcod. So that's what I think kind of was the thought, that thought that got this poem rolling. And then I thought about mimes. I don't own a snakeskin purse, but I think I thought that was funny. But the child part about my sister, the part is really true, is that I ended up with this super, super scary clown poster on the back of my door. So when you shut the door at night, because just in case there was a fire.
Yeah, you know, shut the door. Yeah.
You shut the door, the clown would come out. And I wanted the tiger. And my sister's like, no, I think you like the clown better. Just like she would say, I really think you like Shirley Temple. And I'm like, I don't like watching Shirley Temple. But we had to, I was very tomboyish and she was very like pretty and fluttery.
Was she older sister?
Yeah, I have five older sisters.
That makes sense. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So she knew what was best for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I grew up with two older sisters, so I've had I've had some similar experiences.
They're happy to tell you your opinion.
Yeah.
In case you don't know, because it's wrong. But all in that loving sisterly way.
Yeah. So again, this is one big block.
Yeah.
You said this was kind of from give us context of timeline. You said you had your most recent, this is kind of middle. So, when did you write this?
This one, we started going to Cannon Beach in 2012. I think this was probably about 2016.
Okay.
Now, the block thing, what I think about that is, because for the listeners who can't see this, once again, this is just in a big block, no stanza breaks. Sometimes I think I write something and then I'm just like, I'm through with it. And usually form is the very last thing that I do. I really work on putting together the words and that. And then I try to make sure it's in its right outfit.
Sure.
You know, the poem needs to wear the right outfit. But if you do that first, sometimes you can fool yourself to thinking the poem is done because it looks pretty. When you're revising a block, it never really looks pretty. I will play with like line breaks, but I won't put it into the final form until I really get the poem to a place where I'm like, okay, this is moving forward. You deserve your, you know, prom dress or tuxedo.
That's
so cool.
Yes. I've never thought of it that way, but like, yeah,
I like talking to geniuses. This is cool.
Yeah. Cause like when you dress up a poem and you give it all its lovely little like breaks and stanzas, you trick yourself into being like, it is done.
I'm in the document and I'm putting the couplets.
Already, it looks poetic. Yeah.
Yeah. It looks like, this could be a pretty good poem. So I always save that. That's like my reward, is that once I figure out this is a good poem or this is really going someplace or I've really done some good revision on it, then it gets its outfit. But look at how the couplets made it look so like, you might be like, this one's pretty good.
Yeah.
Right. It looks much more official and ready.
Yeah.
And look at the couplet with the snake skin and then that big word.
In the middle. Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, the trick of the eye alone.
Yeah.
I wish readers or listeners could experience this this yeah. phenomenon, because it does make you go like, oh yeah, that looks like a good poem.
Yeah, take a block poem, listeners. If you have a block poem and you put it into couplets, look how much better it looks and how much you feel better about it. And you feel like, oh, I've moved the poem forward, but you really haven't. You just added space.
That's amazing. So then if you're feeling like the poem is redeemable,
mm-hmm.
block it, maybe dress it up a little, see where it fails, and then return it to its to more editing form. Would you ever do that?
I really try to make sure that the poem is redeemable before I start playing with form, because I feel like that can be a whole. Also, when you start playing with form and you're still revising, you're going to make different changes once the poem's revised to a strong. When it's more well-crafted, you may not have it in couplets. You might be, oh, this is a really interesting break on spicy or on mime or, and so, or you might completely change a word. So I don't like to do that till the very end, because I feel like your form needs to mirror your content. And so if you revise and something new happens and you take out, you know, I take out the moon, or I take out, let's say this had water in it, or I added water, I might want it to look more flowy on the page, but I won't know that until I get way down the road.
Oh, I love this conversation. This is incredible. Okay, good. Yeah.
It's so interesting to hear. Yeah.
And I also love the fact that you bring us a poem with the moon, our favorite guest of the show, the moon in poems. What's your take on moon poetry?
I have a poem in the next book, and it's dedicated to Erin Ballou, who, let me see if I can find it. She said something on Twitter, which I thought was so funny. Oh, I can't remember her Twitter quote, but my title of the poem is The Sky Regrets to Inform You It's Tired of Feeling Judged. And it was Erin had said the funniest thing about this was the quote she sent. She tweeted out, "I doubt we poets could ever leave the moon alone. Just imagine how she would miss us." But it's an awfully sweet compliment. And somebody else just recently wrote a poem about, like, the poets just give every poet a moon. And I think it might have been Keith Manning or Todd Dillard. They had this moon thing going on, I believe. But that's our go-to, right? But it's work. I mean, it's so amazing. Yeah. I mean, I scream when I see the moon still.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
So you don't like mimes? Had a creepy clown poster, turned it into a poem.
Yeah, and a poem that didn't work. So once again, clowns do not add any sort of art to my life. They take away.
Correct.
They steal all the goodness. You know what? And there are good clowns. If you watch Modern Family, I love that. The clown culture on there.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, I think we should probably get to this last one that you have, that it was written in 1998.
Yeah, so I went back in my before 2003. I must have changed computers, and I don't. This was probably on floppy disk. Who knows?
Sure.
But this came back in. This was kind of how I was writing back in the day. I would write about. I took right after college in the 90s, I took a trip, a backpack through Paris and through Europe with the girlfriend throughout the summer. And so I constantly referred to the places I saw as if I was there all the time. Because I didn't know how to write about the ordinary. I had to write about, like, going to Rome or going to Lisbon or taking a train and seeing the fields of Spain, whatever.
Sure.
I don't think that I and my younger self understood that, like, you can actually write about what's happening in your life right now, and you need to be in a foreign country. So this one was written, I think, in 1998, and this is probably the most embarrassing one, and it's just cliche. The title is North of the Eiffel Tower, which means nothing to anyone. So there's already we've gone astray. North of it adds nothing. Okay, here we go. North of the Eiffel Tower. The statue looks away. Spring visits Paris like a stranger. A sparrow blends with the architecture. The sky disappears behind itself. Lovers lean against stone, unaware of traffic. A meadow whispers beneath the bare skin of April. That's it.
It does feel pretty pretentious.
Yeah.
Sound and fury signifying nothing?
I did what I was taught to do as an undergrad, which is right. I ended with an image, but it's not the bearskin of April. Is April a person? Is April the one of the lovers? It's kind of, yeah. I don't know if I was trying to be funny there or like so smart that I made this like.
The double meaning of April?
The double meaning of April.
Ah, sure. Never so, caught that.
The only thing I kind of like in here is this guy disappears behind itself because that made me think a lot like, oh, what does that mean? Like, yeah. I don't. There's just a lot. There's a bird blending with the architecture. And I would use architecture in like any poem I could because I thought it made me sound really smart.
But the funny part is you don't describe any of the architecture.
No.
Right.
If it's a flying buttress or anything, you're just like the architecture.
Right.
Yeah. The sparrow ducks behind a 7-Eleven on the corner.
and it's the architecture blended
of Paris.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and I mentioned the Eiffel Tower because it was, you know, it was the Eiffel Tower, but it plays nothing into the poem. We know we're in Paris because I said spring visits Paris, but north of the Eiffel Tower, is somebody going to read this poem and use it as a map to find the statue, which I don't describe? it's just such a vague, I don't see anything in here. But do you see how I thought I was writing a poem because I went into kind of that beautiful, like the languagey of what I thought a poem was. This is my younger self saying, oh, I think I know what a poem is.
Yeah. Yeah. Dave, what did you say when it feels pretentious? Is that what the word you said?
Yeah.
It has that like poetic, you have your M dashes.
Like Emily Dickinson, I'm following the prose here.
Yep. You got your single line and then your three line stanzas. It's dressed like a poem.
Yep.
It sounds like a poem. You look at it and it,
it's
indented.
It's indented.
So you're like, this is a poem.
Yeah.
This one's got to be good because it's got some indents. It says absolutely not much.
No.
But I feel like that has always been my complaint about poetry, is that as someone who didn't really care much about poetry until recently, like I'd look at all poetry and go, this is just a pretentious person who threw a couple of line breaks into something they wrote. And no offense, but that does feel like what's happening here. But then I read your other poetry and you go, oh no, there are like talented genius people who know what they're doing and make me feel things based on what they write. Like they teach me through simple words, and doesn't have to be this pretentious whatever.
And there can be that incredible meaning behind a line break or an M dash if it adds to the poem. Mm-hmm. And I don't, I think the M dash here is just trying to parallel itself. I don't think it's adding. I don't know. It's not.
It's a technique to show. I've got T.S. Eliot with April. I've got Paris. I've got Emily with the M dashes. I've got that bold statement, which is the statue looks away, the statue looks away. Yeah. Yeah. Is the statue embarrassed for the lovers that lean against the stone, unaware of traffic? I don't know. There's just so much. But there's not an I in this poem, which I thought was kind of interesting because a lot of times earlier work might be a lot of I. So I think I was really trying to sculpt it to my undergraduate, what I learned in at the UW, nice. Which was something, but obviously not a lot. It took some more time.
Sure.
What, you had to like grow and develop as a person to better understand yourself and society? Disgusting.
It's so fun to go back and read your younger self, what you thought was a poem, because I feel like I didn't see the opportunities to really, I don't think I would have ever thought like, oh, I should probably mention what this statue is. Not just say a statue, because to me, back that would be like, oh, a statue in the poem, you know, with the architecture. That was all like the things that I thought were really poetic. Spring in Paris, Yes, absolutely. That belongs in a poem. Mm-hmm. There's nothing in here that you wouldn't expect to be in a poem, which is why it's not working, because it's statue, freaking barrow, architecture, sky, lovers, meadow, and bearskin, and April. I nailed all the cliches.
It really does feel like a Mad Lib for poetry.
Yeah.
Like, you could take some of these words out and be like, what's a cliche I could fit?
You know what would be really, actually, that would be really funny. So if instead of statue, like, give me a noun. Like,
yeah, right.
Spaghetti looks away.
The spaghetti looks away.
Yeah.
Spring in Houston.
It might have just the same amount of effect as the statue looking away for me. Yeah. Spaghetti looking away is as meaningful.
Right. Right. I had a professor who would just probably be like, what does that mean? You know, because he was always questioning. I use the term buffalo nickel in a poem because, and it was, I used it in the way like getting a, and he goes, well, if someone got a buffalo nickel, that'd be worth something. That doesn't mean worthless anymore. Like, he was very, like, he would take apart all my different things. And I think you can do that with this, because it says spring visits Paris like a stranger. And then we're talking about a sparrow blends with the architecture and the sky disappears behind itself. Is this what strangers do? They blend with the architecture. I mean, that sounds a little creepy. And the sky disappears behind itself. Now the stranger sounds like a stalker.
Yeah, just trying to hide.
Yeah. Oh. It was like I found what I thought were pretty lines and I put them under something where I just said, spring visits Paris like a stranger, which again, what does that mean? How does a stranger visit a place?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it was what I thought a poem was. That's what I wrote here.
Sure.
Yeah. And the same issue with the last one, the lovers lean against stone, unaware of traffic. A meadow whispers beneath. Is the meadow whispering beneath the traffic?
Right.
Whispering beneath the stone, the lovers?
No, that's how the roads in Paris are. They're unpaved. It's just grass.
Just grass meadows. Yeah.
Yeah. If you are someone reading this, coming onto this planet and reading this poem, that is what you would think. Lovers lean against the stone, unaware of traffic. A meadow and traffic. Yeah, it's just I've got the poet look or the reader looking all different directions.
Right.
It kind of feels like, you know, in a movie or a TV show when they try and do shorthand of like, we've changed locations and they just do like a couple different establishing shots. This poem feels like a string of establishing shots.
Ooh, now that wouldn't that be a better title? Establishing shots.
Yes. That would. Yeah.
Then you could get away with some of this garbage.
That's some heavy work that a title could do, yeah.
It shows the power of a good title.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last time you introduced us to the phrase cake title.
So, that's right. The cake title is when you show up at your workshop with some garbage title because your workshop has told you if you bring an untitled poem, you have to bring cake for the whole group. So you title your poem something like Morning.
Or North of the Eiffel Tower.
The Tower, which doesn't matter. Eiffel Towel is even better.
I love how you're actively editing this in the
This is very fun.
Yeah, so we could do so many fun things. One, just changing the title a couple different ways makes it either more jokey or it explains the lines in a different way. And then the idea of making it a Mad Libs of like doing noun, give me a city, give me a bird, give me a verb.
Well, you could make it like, it would be funny if the opening line was the naked statue looks away. Cause then there are lovers, which is a whole, like what is happening below this statue?
Oh, sure.
And then the bare skin of April makes a little more sense. It's like, is that the name of the statue? Is that the name of the lover? Is that the month of spring, which that's immediately what I read.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot. The naked statue looks away. Because that's kind of funny. Then it could be kind of jokey because like the naked statue is the one looking away because it's embarrassed, but it's
ashamed. Yeah.
I don't know. But you'd have to probably say nude. Naked would be more jokey.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to have to like play with this more.
Or we could just, I say this with love, burn it.
Burn it. We could just
burn it with fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let it go peacefully.
That's a good night. Well, you know what would be really interesting is, what would if we flipped this poem upside down and started with the bare skin of April, a meadow whispers beneath lovers, lean into stone, unaware of traffic. The sky disappears behind it. I mean, that's another thing I like to do sometimes to a poem is just flip it on its head. So then you start at the bottom and you read it up, because a lot of times you get much more interesting syntax than when you write like the way we talk sometimes.
Sure.
But that's also a fun thing to do. I mean, I think the bare skin of April would be a much more interesting opening than the statue looks away.
Yes. Yeah. And with even the statue looks away as a definitive end. Mm-hmm.
Dear listener.
Just one listener. Yeah.
Just one listener. Kelly has apparently lost it and is writing the cheese stands alone. The statue stands alone. Yes. The statue stands alone.
This is incredible, but I worry for your sanity, Kelly, if you stay on with this for too much longer.
I know.
So do you want to talk a bit about what you're working on?
Yes. I will tell you what I'm working on. I am working on a manuscript called Accidental Devotions. I have finally shared that title publicly, which is something that it's hard for me to do, because then if I change the title, it feels like, oh, you know, I just shared something very different. Like, and now I made it, I know somebody when they date someone that they have to date them for a certain amount of time before they earn name rights. So, that person was called 6'5" for about 4 months. And I still don't know the name of the person that they were dating. Huh.
Well, if you see a person who is 6 feet tall or 6'5", then you have a good guess.
Yeah. Just any 6'5" person, I'll be like,
yep.
Hey, are you dating my friend?
So it was hard to put that out, but it's called Accidental Devotions.
I thought it was kind of taboo to say things before they go into print.
Well, it hasn't even been, I haven't even sent it to my editor. I just wanted to kind of put that out into the world, almost in a more manifesting way.
Okay.
Sure. It does revisit more spiritual themes from my earlier work. And I did create a form called an accidental devotion and a devotion. So I have two self-created forms in there, and it deals with, once again, climate change, mental health, desire, queerness, digital age. It's got a lot going on.
Just tackling the easy stuff, right? Simple.
Put that together.
Yeah. Those live, laugh, love devotions that just lift your spirits in the morning, you know?
It'll be at the Hallmark section of the poetry. So yeah, that's what I'm here. I'm at a writing residency right now. I hope to finish it this week because it's close.
That's awesome.
That's so cool. Super excited to see what Accidental Devotionals ends up being. And if you change the title,
you'll just have to come back and blur it out in this.
The title of the book. Yeah, we'll redub it. So it'll be your voice for a while, and then all of a sudden you'll be like, Intentional Prayers.
No, if anything, it needs to be North of the Eiffel Tower.
North of the Eiffel Tower.
Oh my God, And Kelly's book is North of the Eiffel Tower. You know, I think I now want to write a poem while I'm here called Intentional Prayers.
Kelly, we are honored again that you have given us your time for our silly little show. But before we give you too much more extra work and or drive you nutty with all your editing of bad poems, we should probably wrap this up. So before we let you go, here at My Bad Poetry, we end each week with the words of a true poet. So would you be willing to share for us another one of your poems that you are indeed proud of?
Okay, here's one I am proud of. I mean, it's a shorter poem, and it's in the next book.
Ooh.
And I don't know if it has a moon in it. I don't think it does. I chose this poem just immediately. I wasn't going to read it, but if we go back to the beginning where Dave talked about the sweet shackles, this is the poem, I think, responds to that.
Mm.
That idea of the people around us. Okay?
So not only did I have to bring a bad poem, but now you're going to one-up me and read something actually good?
And this is how you do it.
This is how you do it. That's awesome.
This is like the mic drop moment. I wish I would have dropped my pen at the end of that. Okay. This is called Hum of the Living. Hum of the Living. At midnight, what haunts me is remembering the helpful instructions for the dying pamphlet the hospice worker gave me. It's subtle, but not. Like finding a pocket knife in your favorite birch. Like the last bedroom she wandered in, her last inhale. When the hospice worker said, "Listen to a song that gives you hope," I said, "It's the hum of the living, the sound of the dishes that leave the kitchen. They remind me life is here." All those years of wishing for quiet, for calmness, for less clutter. Protect the chaos with your life.
Do I really have to keep bringing poems? Because this is just unfair. That was glorious and beautiful.
Thank you.
I just love that.
Thank you. It's one of my themes. I do think about dying, but this one was actually written for my Nana, who died at 107 right before COVID, wow. Which I'm truly thankful for. That actually ended up being a blessing, but it reminds me how sometimes, as somebody who tries to like keep a tidy house or that, but there's all these messy humans around you, how much all these things you will miss if it wasn't there.
Right.
And just capturing that space in between of hospice, mm-hmm. it's that holy space that just people don't often talk about. And so you captured that beautifully. Yeah.
Thank you. Right. Yeah. It's probably the hardest thing to watch because you know where. Though my mom became a hospice. Here's a positive hospice story. My mom became a hospice volunteer after my father died. And the first person she was the supporter for hospice, came out of hospice and lived, and is still living.
Wow. That's so cool.
And they told her, don't expect this to always happen. And my mom's like, right. I might be a miracle worker.
This has been My Bad Poetry.
Now go write some of your own bad poetry.
Perfect.
Yay. Very nice.
That was it.
Yay. Rhyme free, rhyme does matter.